This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode from the midweek edition of the Coin Bureau podcast. Every week, I pick out two of my favorite videos from Coin Bureau's YouTube channel to present to you in podcast form. The audio you're about to hear is from those videos I've chosen this week, and I hope you enjoy listening. First up, back to FTX, the big story of the moment and likely to remain so for some time yet. The company is now in the throes of bankruptcy proceedings, and the recent Chapter 11 filing that kicked these off makes interesting reading, to put it mildly. The filing was submitted by one John J. Ray III, the man now serving as FTX's CEO and charged with clearing up the mess left behind by his predecessor. And what a mess it is. The filing reveals just how haphazardly, unprofessionally, and downright negligently FTX and Alameda Research were run by Sam Bankman-Fried and his inner circle of friends and acolytes. The filing almost reads like an outline for how not to run a company and has left many in the crypto industry and beyond aghast. In the first part of today's episode, you'll hear our breakdown of it. Keep those stress balls at the ready. One of the talking points in the wake of the FTX scandal is around proof of reserves. This is the idea that crypto exchanges should become more transparent about the assets they hold and, crucially, their liabilities as well. So many people trusted FTX to hold their assets and saw that trust abused. That cannot be allowed to happen again. So, have a listen to our breakdown of what proof of reserves means and what some of the biggest exchanges out there are doing to reassure their users that they do in fact have the necessary funds to hand to honour withdrawals. We also asked the question of whether the future lies not with centralised exchanges, but decentralised ones instead. Could recent events be the start of a shift in how people buy crypto? Thanks for listening to today's episode, and there'll be more coming your way very soon. And if you want even more content from Coin Bureau, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and visit us on social media too. It's been 2 weeks since FTX and Alameda Research collapsed, and yet we are still only just starting to understand what happened and what the effects on all of cryptocurrency could be. One of the biggest bombshells so far has been FTX's bankruptcy filing from last Thursday. What it reveals about the crypto exchange is downright disturbing and foreshadows further grave issues for crypto. Today, I'm going to give you a summary of FTX's bankruptcy filing, tell you what it says in simple terms, and explain exactly how it could affect the crypto market. Okay, let's get straight into it. FTX's bankruptcy filing begins with a declaration from the exchange's new CEO, John J. Ray III. Now, there is a name. For context, Sam Bankman-Fried stepped down as CEO of FTX when FTX and its sister company, Alameda Research, declared bankruptcy on the 11th of November. You should also know that John is famous for being the CEO in charge of overseeing the bankruptcy of American energy company Enron. John has also worked on other high-profile bankruptcies, such as Nortel. His involvement in the FTX bankruptcy therefore underscores how serious the situation is. Now, John starts by saying that he was appointed CEO of FTX in the, quote, early morning hours of the 11th of November, and his first order of business was to file for bankruptcy. His second order of business was to work with blockchain analytics firms, regulators, and law enforcement to identify FTX's assets. John then bluntly states, quote, "Never in my career have I seen such a complete failure of corporate controls and such a complete absence of trustworthy financial information as occurred here." This statement made the headlines in both the crypto and mainstream medias. John goes on to explain that the Chapter 11 bankruptcy filing by FTX has five objectives. Implementation of controls, i.e. set up new procedures in the company, asset protection and recovery, transparency and investigation of Sam Bankman-Fried, efficiency and coordination with regulators, law enforcement, etc., and the maximalization of value, i.e. compensating those affected as best as possible. John reveals that the information in this bankruptcy filing is based on his knowledge of what was going on at FTX. Obviously, the information is likely to be incomplete, hence why John notes that FTX will submit additional information in the coming weeks as it's unearthed. In other words, this still might just be the tip of the iceberg. Now, the first part of the bankruptcy filing details how FTX was structured. John identifies four groups of businesses, which he refers to as silos. The first is called the WRS silo, and it includes all of FTX's US companies and subsidiaries. Now, for the sake of simplicity, I'll refer to the WRS silo as the FTX US silo. The second silo is the Alameda silo, which includes all the companies related to Alameda Research, which was one of the biggest traders and market makers in crypto. Alameda was actually the largest recipient of all the USDT ever issued by Tether. More about that in the description. I digress. A footnote for the Alameda silo's balance sheet notes that Alameda Research loaned $1 billion to Sam Bankman-Fried, over $540 million to engineering director Nishad Singh, and over $50 million to FTX co-CEO Ryan Salame. The third silo is the ventures silo, which includes all the companies related to FTX's investment activities. Now, John refers to the fourth silo as the dot-com silo. This is a little confusing since the dot-com silo includes all of FTX's overseas companies and subsidiaries. So, let's just call this the FTX Global silo. Now, John explains that these four silos make up the FTX group. Not surprisingly, Sam Bankman-Fried was the controller of all four silos. John notes FTX and Alameda Research co-founder Gary Wang as a minority shareholder in the FTX group, along with Nishad Singh, who was apparently also a co-founder. What's crazy is that no other investors besides Sam, Gary, and Nishad held more than 2% of any of the silos. What's even crazier is that FTX had raised $2 billion before going bust. This means that those investors got basically nothing in return, which raises lots of questions in my book. Anyways, what you're looking at here is a breakdown of the four silos, along with the ownership stakes that Sam, Gary, Nishad, and other investors had in them. If you're just listening in, Sam held 53% of the FTX US silo, 90% of the Alameda silo, 67% of the Ventures silo, and 75% of the FTX Global silo. Third-party investors only held 22% of the FTX US silo and 25% of the FTX Global silo. The rest was owned by the trio. John also provides a corporate structure chart for these silos and their subsidiaries. Now, there's honestly too much information to go over here, and it's also kind of pointless to summarize since John cautions that it's preliminary, i.e. incomplete. The link to the full bankruptcy filing will be in the description if you want to take a closer look. The company organization chart is on the very last page. Anyways, John goes on to give a detailed breakdown of each of the four silos, starting with the FTX US one. He begins by explaining that the FTX US exchange itself had over 1 million users and was registered with the Department of the Treasury as a money services business. Not only that, but one of the subsidiaries of FTX US was registered with the SEC. Some of you may have heard that there are peculiar connections between FTX, Alameda Research, and the SEC via Sam and Alameda CEO Caroline Ellison. I reckon this SEC registration is another peculiarity to add to that pile. After talking about all the other subsidiaries that were owned and operated by the FTX US silo, John reveals that these subsidiaries hold around $1.4 billion in assets. However, he cautions that the numbers are likely incorrect due to Sam's involvement in the balance sheet report. It was also unaudited. Interestingly, the FTX US silo appears to have just under $400,000 of liabilities, that is, debt. John notes that this can't possibly be accurate, given that FTX US presumably held billions of dollars in user assets, which would count as liabilities, but are not noted in the balance sheet report. Next, John gives a detailed breakdown of the Alameda silo. As with the FTX US silo, John casts doubt on the idea that Alameda Research had $13.5 billion in assets and just $5 billion of liabilities. This is again because the balance sheet report was provided by Sam and unaudited like the others. For the Ventures silo, the balance sheet has been divided into two for the two major subsidiaries of the silo. Together, these two subsidiaries had $2 billion in assets and an almost equal amount in liabilities, though John says it is once again unknown whether their balance sheets are correct. And last but not least, we have the FTX Global silo, and John admits that his team couldn't figure out how many users the FTX exchange actually had. All they know for now is that Sam claimed FTX had, quote, millions of users who had over $15 billion of crypto on the exchange at the end of 2021. The most likely cooked books claim that FTX had over $2.25 billion of assets versus less than $500,000 of liabilities. As with FTX US, it's essentially guaranteed that FTX's liabilities were exponentially larger due to the billions of dollars of customer assets that were on the exchange. The second part of the bankruptcy filing explains the events that happened shortly before the filing itself took place. John explains that the freeze on FTX's assets by Bahamas regulators shortly before the bankruptcy filing only applied to one of the subsidiaries of the FTX global silo. Explains a lot. As for Sam, he was consulting with numerous lawyers, including his own father, about his resignation as CEO and the commencement of FTX's bankruptcy. At around 4:30 a.m. on the 11th of November, Sam conceded defeat and handed over control of all of FTX to John, who immediately filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. This ties into the third part of the bankruptcy filing, which explains what John has done since that point. The first thing he did was establish a governance structure for FTX and each of its four silos, something you'll recall as being the first of the five Chapter 11 bankruptcy objectives. John explains that he and the newly appointed directors of the four silos will work together to meet all five objectives of the Chapter 11 bankruptcy. He acknowledges that this will be easier said than done, as all four silos are interrelated and could therefore have overlapping claims on the same assets. John then dives deeper into FTX's financials, and many of his findings made the headlines. The first finding was that FTX did not keep track of its cash balances, bank accounts, or the people who oversaw those bank accounts. They also didn't consider the quality of banks they were using. John explains that his team will do their best to find FTX's cash and transfer it all to financial institutions in the United States. Naturally, each silo will have its own account. Now, I couldn't help but notice that these cash transfers will only occur if they can be done, quote, without adverse consequences. I wonder what that means. Conspiracies aside, so far, John and his team have managed to dig up over two dozen FTX bank accounts around the world that collectively hold over $500 million in cash. The relevant banks have been instructed to freeze all these accounts and not to process withdrawals for Sam or other signatories. Now, if you thought FTX's bank account situation was sketchy, consider the company's financial reporting. While the FTX US silo was being properly audited, the FTX global silo was being audited by a questionable auditing firm that claimed to be the first to open offices in Decentraland. To add insult to injury, John couldn't find any audited financial statements for the Alameda silo or the Ventures silo. He admits that it's going to take some time to accumulate accurate financial information about the four silos. Something tells me that those balance sheets will have a lot of black holes. Did I mention that FTX's empire didn't even have an accounting department? Anyhow, it turns out that FTX's human resources department wasn't any better than its financial department. John said his team hasn't even been able to put together a list of FTX employees because none of the four silos had detailed records of that information. They didn't even have board meetings. For what it's worth, John says he's been working closely with a core team of FTX employees to figure out exactly what's going on. Many of you probably heard the news that almost everyone, except Sam's inner circle, was in the dark, and many FTX employees also had their money on the exchange. As expected, FTX's disbursements, that is, payouts, were about as disorganized, with employees having to submit paycheck requests in a company chat room. As reported, some of FTX's capital was used to acquire properties in the Bahamas. The records of these transactions are, of course, a complete mess. Regarding the custody of cryptocurrency, FTX didn't keep any detailed records there either. If I understand correctly, only Sam Bankman-Fried and co-founder Gary Wang had access to the private keys for all the crypto wallets of the FTX empire. These private keys were transferred around using unsecured emails. By now, most of you will know that Sam and Gary use secret software to mask their misuse of customer funds, and that Alameda Research was exempt from auto-liquidation on FTX. In plain English, this means that Alameda could enter extremely risky trades and not lose money if the trade went against them. The game was rigged in their favor, and they still lost. John also confirms that the FTX Global silo and Alameda silo were both governed by Sam and Gary. This is something that I was wondering about in our video about the FTX Alameda situation. It's insane to think that much of the info has come out since that video. It'll be in the description if you missed it. Now, the bad news is that John and his team have only been able to locate around $740 million of cryptocurrency held by FTX. This balance doesn't include the almost $400 million of crypto that was stolen from FTX, nor the $300 million of FTT that was recently printed. What's odd is that John seems to imply that Sam, Gary, and the other higher-ups at FTX haven't been able to identify other crypto wallets that may belong to the exchange. This is odd because they damn well should know, given that they were the only ones with access to the private keys. I suppose it doesn't matter because blockchain analytics companies are already hard at work tracking down every transaction that went in or out of FTX. Ironically enough, Chainalysis, the largest blockchain analytics company, recently confirmed that it had exposure to FTX. John reiterates the fact that most FTX employees had no idea what Sam and co. were up to. They had no idea that the assets of FTX and Alameda were being traded back and forth, nor that the cryptocurrencies of FTX users were being commingled with the company's cryptocurrencies. Speaking of which, John confirms that FTX had billions of dollars in other investments outside of cryptocurrency. This is something that Caroline had mentioned on Twitter during the chaos, but many people were skeptical. The list of skeptics seems to include John, as his team has yet to identify these other assets. This is all because of FTX's unbelievably bad record keeping, which extended to internal communication. Quote, Sam Bankman-Fried often communicated by using applications that were set to auto-delete after a short period of time and encouraged employees to do the same. The conspiracy theorists are going to have a field day with that one. Now, despite all these hurdles, John assures the court that his team is collecting as much information as possible about FTX's operations. They're working with former and current regulators and law enforcement around the world to that end. John and his team are also working to sort out all the different subsidiaries FTX had around the world, including selling them if they have any value. You can bet that competing crypto companies are going to be keeping an eye out for those fire sales. Now, what caught my eye was the section about access to data. That's because John notes that his team cannot access certain data because, quote, the debtors have been advised that attempts to access this property of the estate may create a risk of its loss to unauthorized persons. John hints that this data is related to the largest clients of FTX, as he claims his team cannot make a list of the top 50 largest creditors without it. I reckon this list will eventually be produced, but it certainly begs the question of what information will be omitted. In closing, John takes a dig at Sam, saying that he, quote, continues to make erratic and misleading public statements on Twitter, and that these statements should effectively be ignored. I reckon they're hard to ignore when Sam should already be behind bars and not tweeting or playing video games. So, this brings me to the big question, and that's what effect FTX's bankruptcy filing is likely to have on the crypto market. In short, it's going to be really bad, and that's simply because FTX was believed to be one of the most trustworthy crypto companies in existence. I mean, take a second to consider that Sam was on a first-name basis with politicians, was actively pushing for crypto regulations, and was allegedly in bed with the SEC and others. The FTX exchange received billions of dollars of investment from big names, including asset managers like BlackRock. Heck, even a Canadian pension fund invested in it. This gives the impression to politicians, regulators, and even crypto holders that no matter how clean a crypto company appears to be, chances are it's doing something shady behind the scenes. The supposedly high quality of other crypto exchanges is now being called into question, and it's not good. You can bet your bottom Bitcoin that we're going to see lots of investigation into not just FTX, but every other crypto exchange out there. This is almost guaranteed because FTX and Alameda were massive players in the crypto industry. This means they probably have lots of information about every crypto company. As I mentioned earlier, Alameda Research was the largest recipient of all the USDT ever issued by Terra. This means there is a high likelihood that Alameda has more information about Tether than any other crypto company besides Tether itself, and it's likely this information will be revealed very soon. On that note, the information that FTX and Alameda have about counterparties may be why Sam isn't in prison. If it's true that FTX and Alameda were working with the US government in some capacity, then you can bet that Sam has lots of information on Uncle Sam too, information that powerful people don't want made public. Now, this is just my speculation, but to my mind, it's the only explanation as to why Sam continues to be living life as usual, despite doing tens of billions in dollars in damage to FTX's users and the wider crypto industry. It's probably a similar situation for the other insiders at FTX and Alameda. In any case, it's clear that we're nowhere close to getting the full facts about what happened behind the scenes. Until we do, there'll be no shortage of conspiracy theories, some of which could well turn out to be true. There will also be no shortage of scrutiny directed at the crypto industry, and to be honest, much of it will be justly deserved. Hold on tight.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid-back appeal and down-home vibes. As a dad of seven kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th, just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
The collapse of FTX and Alameda Research has left crypto holders wondering what other exchanges might be doing with their customers' coins and tokens behind the scenes. The call for transparency by the crypto community has been answered by most major cryptocurrency exchanges, which have published proofs of their crypto reserves over the last 2 weeks. Today, I'm going to explain what proof of reserves means, scrutinize the crypto reserves of some of these exchanges, and examine whether decentralized exchanges will take over as a result. FTX's shenanigans have inevitably led to questions over the reliability and trustworthiness of other exchanges, and rightly so. FTX secretly sent billions of dollars of its users' cryptocurrency to prop up its sister trading firm, Alameda Research. This is why FTX couldn't process all the crypto withdrawal requests coming from its users, and ultimately, why the exchange had to file for bankruptcy. Oddly enough, it was Binance CEO Changpeng Zhao, or CZ, who proposed a solution to the crypto community's collapse in trust. I say oddly because CZ's tweet that Binance would be dumping its FTT is one of the catalysts that led to FTX and Alameda's collapse. On the 8th of November, CZ tweeted, quote, "All crypto exchanges should do Merkle tree proof of reserves. Banks run on fractional reserves. Crypto exchanges should not. Binance will start to do proof of reserves soon. Full transparency." So, for those unfamiliar, proof of reserves, or POR, essentially involves taking a cryptographic snapshot of the coins and tokens held by a cryptocurrency exchange. Now, it's important to note that POR is supposed to be done with the help of an independent third party or protocol. In this case, it looks like most cryptocurrency exchanges have been working with blockchain analytics platform Nansen for their PORs. I'll leave a link to Nansen's exchange holding page in the description if you're interested. Now, another thing that's important to note is that POR is also supposed to include the liabilities of a cryptocurrency exchange. In this context, liabilities means the coins and tokens an exchange is holding on behalf of its users. Obviously, these coins and tokens don't technically count as an exchange's assets. If you watched our recent video about FTX's bankruptcy filing, you'll know that both FTX US and FTX International didn't count their users' crypto as liabilities on their balance sheets. This basically made it look like both had enough crypto on hand to meet withdrawal demand, when they really didn't. Now, the only exchanges that have included liabilities in their proof of reserves so far have been Kraken, which actually began doing POR back in February, Gate.io, which uses the same accounting firm as Kraken, Armanino, and OKX, which apparently reported its own liabilities without an accounting firm. Funnily enough, Coinbase has not provided POR for assets or liabilities. Coinbase COO Emily Choi explained to CoinDesk that this is because Coinbase is regularly audited as a publicly traded company, so its balance sheet is already fully available. I'll leave a link to it in the description if you're interested. And before I go on, I will caution that even if an exchange has done thorough POR for both its assets and liabilities, there is no guarantee that your crypto is safe on that exchange. This is simply because you can never know for sure that the individual or institution that crunched the numbers is being honest. The only way to guarantee the safety of your cryptocurrency is to keep your coins and tokens in your own personal non-custodial wallet. It's also the only way to guarantee your financial freedom, because having millions in the bank means nothing if you don't have the ability to spend that money when and how you want. Seriously, guys, I can't stress this enough. Be sure to check out my recent video about how to keep your crypto safe. It, too, will be in the description. Now, the first POR I want to analyze comes from Binance, which was, of course, after Kraken, the first exchange to provide POR. If I had my tinfoil hat on, I'd tell you that Binance led the charge for POR to further squeeze its competitors. Then again, other exchanges probably wanted to do POR to increase user confidence. In any case, the top assets on Binance's balance sheet are as follows. 31% in the BUSD stablecoin, 22% in the USDT stablecoin, 13% in BTC, just under 10% in BNB, 8% in ETH, and the remaining 16% or so in other cryptocurrencies. Grand total, $67 billion. Now, this would be amazing were it not for the fact that Binance has yet to publish proof of liabilities, specifically of user deposits. With an estimated 30 million users, it's very likely that Binance's liabilities are very large and likely on par with its assets, as with other exchanges that have revealed their liabilities. That said, in a Twitter Spaces discussion, CZ explained that Binance has no liabilities. This doesn't make much sense given that the exchange obviously holds the coins and tokens of many of its users. This is admittedly concerning, but Binance should be publishing its liabilities soon. More about that later. In the interim, we're likely to see no shortage of hit pieces such as this one from Bloomberg, which took issue with the fact that around 40% of Binance's reserves are held in its own branded assets, namely BUSD and BNB. CZ called the article fake news, and rightfully so to some extent. That's because even though BUSD is branded as Binance's stablecoin, it's actually issued by Paxos, a heavily regulated stablecoin issuer based in the United States. Paxos actually seems to be the most regulated stablecoin issuer of them all, which theoretically makes BUSD the safest stablecoin. Binance's holdings of USDT are more concerning, though. Tether has already been under extreme scrutiny from US regulators for years. Given that Alameda Research was the largest recipient of all the USDT ever issued, I suspect that this scrutiny will soon return, and possibly with even more intensity. Don't even get me started about all the pending stablecoin regulations either. It's a similar story with BNB too. If you watched our video about BNB, you'll know that it was created by Binance way back in 2017 when it was known as Binance Coin. BNB became independent of Binance earlier this year and rebranded as Build and Build, but BNB's ecosystem is still dependent on Binance. If you want more of an overview of Binance as an exchange, then you can check out our review over here. Anyways, the second POR I want to analyze comes from Crypto.com, which was the second exchange to release its POR after Binance. If I recall correctly, Crypto.com was planning on releasing its POR closer to the end of the month, but rushed to release an initial POR after questions arose about the exchange's solvency. These questions arose because of the announcement by Crypto.com that it was pausing deposits and withdrawals of USDT and USDC on the Solana blockchain. What's strange is that this is exactly what Binance, OKX, and other exchanges did shortly afterwards, yet there were no concerns there. In any case, the top assets on Crypto.com's balance sheet are as follows. 25% in BTC, 22% in USDC, 19% in SHIB, 11% in ETH, just under 4% in USDT, and around 18% in other cryptocurrencies. Grand total, $3 billion. Note, Crypto.com claimed in its POR release that it has more crypto elsewhere. Like Binance, Crypto.com has yet to publish proof of its liabilities. These liabilities are likely to be even larger than Binance's, given that Crypto.com claims to have over 50 million users. This certainly begs the question of why there's such a large difference between the assets held by Binance and by Crypto.com. The answer seems to be on-chain. Shortly after Crypto.com released its POR, it was found that the exchange had transferred 320,000 ETH, worth over $400 million, to Gate.io in late October, which was returned a few days later. Crypto.com CEO Chris Marszalek claimed the transfer was just a mistake. It's safe to say that the crypto community wasn't convinced because Chris had to hold an emergency AMA to clear up the confusion. Now, I have yet to watch that AMA, but it seems it was enough to calm Crypto.com's holders, since the exchange's Kronos coin pumped shortly afterwards. When it comes to Crypto.com's actual assets, its balance sheet is definitely a mixed bag. Having BTC as its largest holding is a bit risky given all the crypto market volatility. Having almost all your stablecoin holdings in Circle's USDC is likewise unwise, in my opinion. I suppose it reveals which entities Crypto.com is close to. More about the company taking over cryptocurrency using the link in the description. I digress. Now, not surprisingly, the news that Crypto.com holds a fifth of its asset reserves in Shiba Inu's SHIB token made the crypto headlines. That's because SHIB is a meme coin whose value is fundamentally reliant on retail speculation, which has been quickly sucked out of the crypto market as it crashes. Chris explained in the aforementioned AMA that, quote, "It so happens that last year Doge and SHIB were two extremely hot meme coins, and people bought a lot, and they're holding it. They didn't sell it. We have no control over what you guys buy. You buy it, we will store it. We will keep it safe." Now, this actually makes a lot of sense, but it won't be confirmed until Crypto.com publishes its liabilities. If I understand correctly, this will be done in the next few weeks, as the blog post announcing Crypto.com's assets POR notes that it will confirm a, quote, "full one-to-one reserve of all customer assets." Anyhow, the third POR I want to analyze comes from OKX, which you'll recall included liabilities, albeit self-reported ones. OKX released its proof of reserves just a few days ago, but what's annoying is that the proof of reserves on its website doesn't tell us all that much. That's because it only gives us info about OKX's BTC, ETH, and USDT holdings. OKX claims to hold around 108,000 BTC against 105,000 BTC of user holdings. For ETH, it's 1,050,000 against 1,025,000, and for USDT, it's 3,060,000 against 3,016,000. The main takeaway is that OKX appears to have more crypto on hand than the crypto that's been deposited by its users. Now, this is excellent, but again, it doesn't include the other dozens of cryptocurrencies the exchange offers. It's also not clear which accounting firm was involved, if any. Unfortunately, Nansen doesn't have any additional data either. According to Nansen, the top assets on OKX's balance sheet are as follows. Almost 50% in USDT, 25% in BTC, 20% in ETH, 5% in USDC, and just a fraction of a percentage point for all the other cryptocurrencies the exchange offers. OKX's blog post announcing its proof of reserves notes that it will publish asset and liability information about the other cryptocurrencies it holds soon. To be exact, the exchange said that the self-audit feature will become available for all these other cryptocurrencies. This is a small but significant detail, because self-auditing means that OKX users can cryptographically verify that the exchange holds the coins and tokens it claims to. If I'm not mistaken, Kraken, BitMEX, and Gate.io are the only other crypto exchanges that currently offer this feature. To my understanding, Binance, Crypto.com, and others will be providing this same level of transparency over the coming weeks. The only reason they don't offer the self-audit feature already is because most of the info that's been released so far is the wallet addresses, not the cryptographic proofs of reserve. Oh, and in case you're wondering, the grand total of OKX's crypto holdings is around $6 billion. With around 20 million users, it sounds like OKX is well capitalized. But as with all the other exchanges so far, the devil is truly in the detail. Although holding most of your reserves in stablecoins is safe, it's a lot less safe when almost all these stablecoin reserves are in one, specifically Tether's USDT. As I mentioned earlier, Tether is facing its fair share of regulatory scrutiny from the United States and other countries. That is a bit risky, in my opinion. Even so, OKX's incomplete reserves paint a fairly promising picture. The remaining 50% is in BTC, ETH, and USDC, and all three are pristine collateral by crypto standards. Let's just hope that OKX doesn't reveal that it's holding a massive chunk of its reserves in some meme coin later down the line. Now, if you want to do a bit more due diligence on OKX, then we also have a review of that as well, and I will leave that in the description for you folks. Anywho, the fourth and final POR I want to analyze comes from KuCoin, which released all its wallet addresses earlier this month and is working on a cryptographic POR with a third-party auditor. The blog post announcing KuCoin's wallets notes the cryptographic POR will be published in early December. In any case, the top assets on KuCoin's balance sheet are as follows. 32% in USDT, just under 18% in KCS, 11% in BTC, around 8% in ETH, around 7% in USDC, and 24% in everything else. Grand total, $2.5 billion of assets to back whatever liabilities are coming from KuCoin's 20 million users. Like OKX and Crypto.com, KuCoin has almost all of its stablecoin eggs in one basket, in this case, USDT. This seems to be the standard for most crypto exchanges that aren't based in the United States, and it underscores how much damage would be done to the crypto ecosystem if Tether is ever taken down. Similarly to Binance, KuCoin holds a substantial chunk of its reserves in its own KCS token. In contrast to Binance's BNB, KuCoin's KCS has limited exchange support and very low liquidity, however. The KCS chain also doesn't have nearly the same amount of activity and adoption as BNB. This means that the KCS token's price action is entirely dependent on KuCoin. If the exchange ever were to experience any issues, KCS's price would plummet. In a worst-case scenario, this could wipe out almost 20% of KuCoin's crypto reserves. Now, the remainder of KuCoin's reserves are interesting yet expected. Barely a fifth in BTC and ETH, and almost a quarter in mid to small cap altcoins. This makes sense because KuCoin is one of the most popular exchanges to go to for mid to small cap altcoins, and the ones it lists tend to be pretty good as well. Now, I should also note that KuCoin's blog post about its wallet addresses also states that it has more reserves than it has reported so far. The fact that KuCoin will be providing cryptographic POR also suggests that the exchange will be providing the liability side of its crypto balance sheet too. This is all well and good, but I'll reiterate that the only way to know for sure that your cryptocurrency is safe is to keep it in your own personal wallet. Only keep what you're actively trading on exchanges. Otherwise, keep everything in a hot or cold wallet. And don't say I didn't warn you.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career.
And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Okay, I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid-back appeal and down-home vibes. As a dad of seven kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th, just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
That being said, if you want an overview of KuCoin more broadly, I have a video for you on that as well. Top right. Por favor. So, this brings me to the big question, and that's whether decentralized exchanges are destined to take over due to the transparency issues of centralized exchanges. In short, yes, but it's going to take quite some time for the DEX experience to beat the SEX experience. For starters, there's the trading experience. Using a DEX is not nearly as easy as using a SEX for crypto noobs. DEXs also don't provide nearly the same degree of flexibility to crypto experts. The good news is that progress is being made on both fronts by wallets like Phantom and order book DEXs like GMX. Then there's the ability to swap between native cryptocurrencies. SEXs effectively let you trade whatever cryptocurrency you want, whereas most DEXs only allow you to trade between tokens on a single blockchain. This is not ideal, as some trades require multiple DEXs and cross-chain bridges. The good news is that there are crypto projects like ThorChain which make it possible to swap cryptocurrencies natively between blockchains. These technologies are still very much in their infancy, but I could see an order book-based cross-chain DEX being built by the end of the next bull market. And finally, there's the on and off ramps. The biggest advantages that SEXs have over DEXs is arguably their ability to let users cash out into filthy fiat. Being able to easily get your money in and out of crypto is of paramount importance, and it's something that DEXs haven't yet managed to do due to all the regulations involved. The good news is that it should become easier to get your money in and out of crypto once it becomes more widely held. Peer-to-peer crypto marketplaces were and continue to be something associated with privacy-obsessed cypherpunks, but they could become very common as crypto adoption increases. In sum, I'm confident that DEXs will displace SEXs in the coming years. I reckon this will be accelerated by crypto regulations, which will only be enforceable against centralized elements of the crypto industry. The truth is that all centralized elements must be removed for this to be called crypto. Take a second to consider that it's the centralized entities which have historically caused and continue to cause all the issues in the crypto industry. It's part of the growing pains, and it is in fact something that the crypto industry should eventually grow out of. Otherwise, we'll end up with more of the same. After all, what FTX and Alameda were doing is no different from what banks do today. The only difference is that the banks get bailed out by the central banks when they lose all their clients' money speculating on risky assets with leverage. The crypto companies who do this just go under, as they should. Stronger crypto companies rise to replace them, however, until their flaws are found and they collapse too. And with each iteration, the crypto industry moves closer to its core values, because that's all that's left when the greed and gains are gone. It will take time, but one day we will no longer have to trust. We will simply verify. And that's it for my video today, folks, but I'm keen to get your feedback, though. Do you trust these proof of reserves? Let me know down below. If you wanted to use any of the exchanges above, I've managed to get special trading fee discounts of up to 60% on some of them. So, if you want to take advantage of that, they're linked to in the description below. Now, of course, we also get a commission when you do this, because it's how we keep the lights on here, and we both benefit. Or, you're more than welcome to sign up directly without our deal, and the links to do so are down below as well. Just remember, whatever you do, don't leave a large amount of funds on the exchange. It is not worth the risk. Thank you so much for listening to the Coin Bureau podcast. If you'd like to learn more about cryptocurrency, you can visit our YouTube channel at youtube.com/coinbureau. You can also go to coinbureau.com for loads more information about all things crypto. You can follow me on Twitter at coinbureau, all one word. And I'm also active on TikTok and Instagram too.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.